Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
Hey, welcome to the show. And today is Tuesday, and this is going out live on Midwave Radio. So you can either ask Alexa or go to the website /midwave-radio to listen live and see the schedule for the rest of the week. Otherwise, if you're watching this on a podcast, then again, same website, /podcast-network. See, not just mine, but maybe some of the other podcasts are in the network. So download the app for Apple and Android, and please subscribe to any that take your fancy. So today's episode is 122, and today we have Doug Brown, who is a sales revenue growth expert. And this is very special to me because he was one of my coaches a while ago. So I'm very happy to have him on here. And we're going to be talking about how to be in the top 1% earners. All right. And my name's Karen Roberts. I'm your host. We provide a platform for coaches, therapists, healers to get their message heard to the people who need it. So if you want to get in touch, go to the website. So Doug, thank you so much for taking some time out today to come and have a chat with me.
Well, thanks, Karen, for having me on here. I'm really grateful.
So Doug is the CEO of CEO Sales Strategies and Sales Revenue and Profit Growth Expert. He's the creator of the Top 1% Academy, where he trains business coaches, consultants, solo entrepreneurs, and salespeople how to get to the top 1% of earners through selling. Now, Doug, he has a very impressive resume. He's coached, consulted, and advised companies and thousands of people in business, including Enterprise Rent Car, Nationwide, Intuit, Procter & Gamble, CBS Television, and many others. He's also served as an independent president of sales and training for none other than Tony Robbins, Chet Holmes, and Russ Whitney, where he's raised the close rate on the sales presenter teams by a whopping 157%, as well as increasing sales for one of their product lines by 4,150%. I mean, wow, is that even doable? In his first 6 months of taking over, which resulted in tens of millions of dollars in extra sales over time, his sales acquisitions and sales revenue growth skills have helped him to sell music equipment to bands like Aerosmith, Boston, the Eagles, and others, becoming a top-selling sales rep for a $2 billion company, increased the company's close rate by 800. I mean, the numbers are just absolutely crazy. So I'm very grateful to have you on the show today, Doug. So first of all, top 1% earner. I mean, what are we talking about here?
So it depends on where you live, really, right? So it's, for example, in the United States, if you're in a state like West Virginia, it might be $342,000 a year. If you're in a state like California and New York, it may be $980,000 per year. But what we looked at is, all right, who is making what they're making per state in the United States? And then that, you know, income of the family income at 1%, who's at the top 1%? That's how we set our benchmarks. So depending on where you are, I mean, obviously you're in the UK, you know, there's different parts. If you're in downtown London, you're probably going to be, you know, a little more costly to live than if you were in, I don't know, maybe Brighton or, you know, up on the Scotland border somewhere.
Yeah, sure. So there's quite a big gap, but you know, who doesn't want to be in the top 1% earners, but with regards to sales, so you deal with lots of different types of people and, like you said, solopreneurs, other coaches. And what I mean, I know what I have found with our industry is that there's people are sort of almost avoiding the sales part of the equation. They all want to be making money. They all want clients. They might be really passionate about what they're doing, but they're because of it being online, it's almost like they expecting people just to come, and buy their stuff. And it's never going to happen, right? They don't have a specific sales process in place. Where do you think this comes from?
Fear, mostly. You know, I would like the same process. Whereas you were saying over in the UK, process, right? I would love that same process. And, you know, just have people like put out a video or put out a web page or whatever, and just have people come and throw all kinds of money at me. I mean, that would be awesome.
Does it happen really? I mean, everybody wants this automated process that people are just going to get their credit card and click the buy button now. And does it really happen?
It happens on products and services that are usually lower cost, right? So people buy on value, Karen. And so the value demonstration's there. Now, with that being said, I mean, we have sold things that are 10,000, you know, US dollars plus online without talking to people. But wow. It's really rare that somebody comes to a website, looks at something and says, yeah, I just throw 10,000 US dollars into this, no challenge, without talking to someone.
And that's where you would obviously have to build the relationship first. That couldn't, surely can't be somebody just that they don't know. They must have had some kind of relationship or have testimonials or know a lot about a brand before they're going to throw that kind of money at it.
So there's the value you're speaking of, right? So that's the brand. So when you have a brand, and a brand is really a promise delivered that people perceive as value to them. When that happens, they will come more easily without assistance, and they will buy based on the brand. I mean, we do that now. If you think of something as simple as, I don't know, British Airways, right? You think, oh, British Airways, reliable. I should be able to get on an airplane, get off an airplane, you know, safely.
Hopefully.
Right. You know, but if you didn't know the company and it was named, you know, Fly By Night Airlines or something like that, you might be like, well, you know, the first time I heard over in Europe, Wizz Airline, WIZZ, I think it is. Wizz Air.
That's new, isn't it?
It's been around for a while, but the first time I heard it, I was like, I'm not flying that airline. Like, I don't know who they are. They got a name like Wizz. I mean, it just doesn't really, you know. So, but, you know, I know, you know, even the low-cost airfare there, because Karen, as you know, I fly over there every once in a while. And you know, like EasyJet or, you know, one of the Ryanair, right, something like that. I didn't know who Ryanair was. I didn't know who EasyJet was the first time. The reason I bought from EasyJet the first time was because they were cheap to fly, right? It was inexpensive. And I didn't know any better. So I'm looking at certain airlines and I'm saying, well, this airline here is three times the cost as this one. And what is it? Just an airplane, right? I mean, I'm going to get on there. They have a safety record. I did check that out. So I bought it because it was inexpensive. But then I got on there and it was like, oh, well, yeah, you got to buy your seat and you've got to pay for placement. And you want a water? Oh, that's 3.5, you know, pounds. You want this, you want that, right? And it was like, okay, so this isn't so inexpensive compared to what I thought. Cheap, right? So now I don't want to deal with the penny, nickel, dime type process of an airline. So now I look at it and I go, okay, I've flown like to Poland, LOT Airlines, or I've flown British Airways, or I've, you know, flown some major brand and I know it's reliable. It's, you know, consistent. So will I pay a little more for a British Airways flight? Absolutely. I do all the time, right? Because they have the brand that in my head, I know there's a consistent, you know, delivery of something that I'm going to enjoy, you know, versus getting in an airline. Now, I'm not saying Ryan or EasyJet doesn't deliver on that, but we've tried one in here in the United States called Allegiant. And I mean, it's basically you're sitting in a lawn chair, in my opinion, you know, flying, right? So, So I will never fly them again, right? I don't fly certain airlines for that reason. However, if I looked at British Airways, for example, I will buy their day flight from the United States to London, so I don't have to fly overnight. And I will pay a lot more money for that. And no one on British Airways has to talk to me because I know the consistency of the brand. So when how does that relate to our own stuff? Well, let's say we're a coach or a consultant or a trainer or an author or something. When we're out in the public square again and again and again, then what we'll do is we'll build brand awareness through people getting to know us, you know? Coffee with Karen, right? It's going to develop a brand. People are going to hear Karen Roberts speaking with people, you know, in this case, me. Anyone that I have credibility with now is starting to immediately transfer that credibility to you, Karen. And anybody you have credibility with will immediately start to transfer the credibility to me because there's a trust built in on both sides of our islands, if you will. And, you know, and so that starts to create brand awareness. And, you know, your podcast, for example, people are listening, they hear you over and over and over and over. And then it goes from who's this gal with, you know, amazing hair to, you know, this business smart expert and to, you know, on and on and on. And they go, okay, you know what? Karen's running something for, I don't know, 5,000, 20,000, whatever. I'll talk to her. Or, you know what, I don't need to talk to her. I mean, we have clients that, you know, invest on a regular basis now, you know, $2,500 to $5,000. They don't even talk to us anymore. They're just like, we know you, we know, you know, I know you, you know me. Just give me the link, right? So in that case, then the brand makes sense. But people who are coaches, consultants, which I know are primarily, you know, your audience, they've got to get out into the public square so that when people go to Google them or Bing them or whatever search engine you want to talk about, that they pull up and they go, oh, okay, it's these people. Without that and without other people talking to them, then they're going to, it's a must. No one will buy just directly off the website unless you get lucky.
Right. But so that, again, so that's just part of it. So this is the thing, is that a lot of people seem to think that all they need to do is to create content and get the content out there and that's going to be it. But what I'm hearing, what you're saying there is, yeah, that's part of it because that's going to be validation or verification that you are who you say you are a real business. So it's part of the process,
right?
But it's not going to actually close them.
No, in most cases, you're absolutely on target. It will not close them because they're going to have questions. And if that content doesn't handle the questions, they need someone to talk with. If we're going to be selling something higher end, then again, depending on what the value prop is in this, Karen, I mean, will somebody come to your website and buy something for, I don't know, $97? Yeah. Without talking to you? Yeah. Why? It's not a very big risk in their head, right? And they might be like, whatever. But, you know, you add another two nines to that, 9997, they're not readily going to do that without a conversation. And so many people today are trying to, you know, teach people like, you got to leverage, you got to leverage, you got to leverage through technology. But what they're forgetting is that they're still dealing with human beings. And human beings have wants, desires, needs, fears, you know, past bad experiences, you know, all of this plays into the equation. And how do we solve those? Communication, like any relationship issue ever gets solved through communication. I mean, part of the reason why I think the divorce rate is so high in the world is because they stop communicating. The two people who were, you know, said, oh, Karen, I love you. I'm going to be with you forever. You know, well, you and I have a better marriage and we're not even married, right? Because you and I have known each other for years. So, but, you know, they after they make those vows to one another, things change and they stop communicating on a certain level. And I believe that's the crux of all great sales, because if somebody's married or somebody's with somebody and not even married, but they're with the other person, don't think you don't have to be out in the public square reaffirming the value of your relationship and the value to that other person. Because that's, I would say, another mistake that people make, Karen, is they're not following up and they're not reevaluating the valuation of what they already had. Like a lot of people, they'll sell a client, they'll just kind of forget about them when they sell them. And then they don't get the re-engagement campaign going, so they don't have the opportunity to deepen the relationship through other sales. So, you know, those are one-trick ponies, as we call them in the United States.
But do you think many people are just trying to, they're avoiding having these communications, right? They're avoiding having the actual conversation because they just want to automate the full process. And yeah, it's that's why they're falling flat on their face, basically.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I'll demonstrate it this way. A lot of people buy Apple products and services online because there's a brand.
Brand. Right?
But why do they have stores? Why does Apple or Microsoft have a store? And why every time I walk by the Apple store at a location like a mall, is it mobbed with people?
100%. 100%. Because, yeah, you want somebody to talk to. And this is the thing. Sometimes online, you don't get enough information, or you might have a question that's not going to get answered, or you've got to, you know, read through a load of jargon or watch a whole video to get the information you need. And you actually just want to ask the question to somebody and get it answered.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's as simple as that. One of the mistakes I see companies making in general right now is they're trying to disassociate from their client base, and they do that through automation. And what's happening is the level of communication breakdown is happening to such a terrible level, in my opinion, that, well, it's not even my opinion, it's fact. It's happening to such a terrible level that they're commoditizing their own value. I mean, if you're a coach and consultant or expert in some field, we'll call everybody experts. If you're an expert in some field and you're not communicating with someone, pretty much you're the same as any other expert out there at that point on the level. Now, just think about this crazy thought, Karen. Experts think they're the only person that that prospective buyer is talking to. And so they think, don't need to communicate. But then they go and they, like, let's say they're looking for how to improve their sales, for example. There are a ton of sales trainers out there. I don't consider myself a sales trainer, but we do sales conversion training. I mean, Karen, you've been through it, so you understand, mm-hmm. right? And if I made the assumption that they're not needing communication, and five other companies make the same assumption because they're talking to five, you know, myself and four other companies, let's say, how does the buyer make a decision because there's no differentiation? Mm. They make it on price or convenience. So if you want to be the low end, you know, kick them out, you know, at whatever low price type person, that model works extremely well. You don't have to talk to anybody at all. Unless you, and if you have a monopoly, that works great too, right? If you're the only electric company in town, so to speak, right? People have to go to the electric company. But let's say four of them won't talk to someone and I do talk to them, which we do. Now I understand what their fears, their wants, their desires, their needs, the opportunities they're looking for, how they're looking to do it. Are there any influences into the process? Do they need to be included in the process? All the parameters that we would always do in type of a discovery session. And guess what? I'm building a rapport way higher than any of the other four. And most of the time, people buy from the person that they like, trust, and respect.
So you've had the opportunity to build that, the know, like, and trust factor by just having a simple conversation that, Yeah, it just seems crazy that people are, I'm sure it's not conscious, you know, they want the sale, but they're somehow avoiding having that conversation. And possibly around like, well, you can remember, you know, I had issues with sales because I had this perception of, you know, if I think of a salesperson, this image would appear on the screen of my mind of a secondhand car salesperson, and not all second car salespeople are bad, but my perception of them was, you know, not to be trusted. And so I think there's like, for some people, not all, especially the ones who've had some form of sales training, are sort of, it's this fear of being pushy or a fear of being perceived maybe in that way. And then, so then they're not actually asking for the sale. So if you don't ask, then you're not going to get, that's one thing certain.
So a couple things I'll unpack on that. I mean, I do remember when we were coaching, I mean, the difference between what we do obviously here is we don't do just sales training. We do sales conversion and revenue growth training, right? And I remember with our conversation, you didn't really like me all that much through our conversations because we were attacking the root of what was going on that was preventing that.
Yeah, you got to the root. Oh, yeah, you got to the root. That's because you went deep, right? So many people, I think, stay on this superficial level, superficial surface. And again, it's fear, isn't it? It's to actually go deep and dig out the root cause. Yeah, well, you helped me, Doug. So what do you mean I didn't like you? I've always loved you.
You might have liked me as a person, but you didn't like what we were going through. I remember.
No, I didn't want to go through it again. I suppose we all try and run away from pain. It's a natural response. And we don't always want to face it, do we? But going back to, so salespeople, they want to be in the top earners. So what do they need to do?
Well, they need to do what you did in a lot of cases, right? So that's why you are where you are today. And so, you know, when you talked about going deep, that's, we have to ask the questions that make people go, what? You just asked me that, right? We have to be so different than not. So what do they have to do? A, they have to get themselves in an environment that's outside their own environment in their own mind. That's A, okay? Because we all have this perception of ourselves. So if we look at it this way, there's the perceived person that we think we are. There's the perceived person that somebody looks at us and thinks we are. And then we are truly who we are. So there's three shells there, if you will. The perception of who we believe we are, the people who look at us and believe what they see, and then the true self of who we are. And so step number one is we've got to get to the truth and mirror all three of those profiles into one. So that when someone looks at us, I mean, Karen, you've known me for a long time. I am me. I mean, you know, we've hung out together in a pub. We've hung out, you know, in training, right? So I'm me. I haven't changed and I won't. Because we are selling ourselves. I'm not saying prostituting ourselves. I said we're selling ourselves in the sales process. People are literally buying who we are and relying on who we are that they can perceive we are. So when that is just complete truth about who we are, then there's no, because buyers are always looking for the aha. Oh yeah, that's it. I got it, right? Because they've been taken before. They've been swindled. How's that for a good word?
Right? Yeah.
Right. And so when you are truly your authentic self and you are yourself, then there's nothing they're going to find that is going to be out of sorts. Now, maybe a personality, a person's personality might be out of sorts, but that's okay. That's you. And in that case, it's not win-win. So first thing is we've got to get to the truth and align ourselves. Okay. Second thing we got to do is we got to get very clear on who we're serving from their perspective. Why? too many people are trying to sell their products or services from their own buyer's bias. So, you know, and Karen, that's why when we were training together and we were in a group environment, I was putting you all through like, okay, what are the five, you know, pains of the buyer? What are the five opportunities the buyer is seeking? You know, what are the five fears that the buyer has, right? And I was always using a power number of five. But the reality is that I was putting you all through those exercises so that you could get clarity on who is thinking what. So that when we align who we are with what they're thinking and our messaging is congruent between those two places, then all of a sudden sales happen magically. Because all we're doing in selling is we're selling the solution to a pain or selling the solution to an opportunity for, to another person. Well, sometimes within ourselves, we have our own inner sale going on, you know. Should I be going to university? Should I not be going to university? Should I ask her out? Should I not ask her out? Right? We go through that type of thing. But for the most part, we're dealing with one or more people. And each one of those has all of those attributes. And what we want to do is align that conversation with our product or service that we offer. If it can truly help them, align that with what they're looking for and help guide them to the end point, which is a win-win. You do that over and over and over again, you will be in the top 1%.
Right. But it's not going to happen overnight, is it?
No, because the other part of being in the top 1% is we've got to generate enough qualified leads. I didn't say leads. I didn't say marketing qualified leads. I said sales qualified leads to have those conversations in order to have so many leads coming in that you can actually be qualifying out and qualifying in. So we have to be the master prospector and we have to be the authentic self and the true conversational conversion salesperson, if you will, or the sales individual in order to get to the 1%. That means we have to understand what drives what they're looking for. And in many cases, most people in most industries, they have a professional ROI they're looking for, i.e., in my case, revenue growth. And they also have personal return on investments that they're looking for. Maybe they're looking for higher repute. Maybe they're looking for happier employees. Maybe they're looking for happier wife or happier husband or happier significant other, right? Whatever those are, we want to align those in the conversation, and then we want to map back the outcomes to all the objections and be able to have those conversations around that objection conversation to map to the outcomes in which they're looking for. So it's all conversational conversion, really, when it comes down to it.
But I know it's a little bit more complicated. I mean, this is something obviously that anybody can learn, right? They can all learn it, but it will take time because it is so complex and everybody is different and they, different personality types are going to relate to, you know, different parts of the conversation and which way you're going to do it. So there is a process to it that can be learnt. But to get up into, I mean, the top 1%, yeah, you got to work at it.
Absolutely. And as I said to you, it usually takes you three times longer than you figure, and it's going to cost you three times more than you figure.
I use that so much because it is so, you were so right, Doug. Mind you, I should have listened to you maybe a little bit sooner because I still didn't. So then I lost a couple of years there. But yes, right. you were so right because it's like any skill. I suppose we're all looking whenever we come across something new. We want to get there. We want to jump from A to B instantly.
Sure.
And like with learning everything, it's there is a process to it, and it's going to take time.
Well, and it's usually a couple of year process, really, when it comes down to it. Like if somebody doesn't understand, or they're starting from a place, it usually takes a couple of years because we've got to go through not only the process of what's a successful conversation or a successful client ascension path or conversion path, we also have to go through that part that you and I went through, which is how do we get ourselves back to our true self? And that part takes a little longer because mm-hmm. most human beings will fight that process.
No, I don't know what you're talking about, Doug.
Well, I didn't say you were that person.
I didn't resist anything. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
I think
people,
in that class,
there will be resistance.
Yeah, of course. And I think, there were probably 21 people or so in that class that you started with in the beginning, right, when we were doing that. And all 21 of them fought it. Right, because it's
but it's worth it.
Yeah,
it's worth it. You've got to go through it, and it's worth it in the end. But yeah, so with you, right? You have is that your main thing now? You've got this top 1% academy, and how who is it that you're looking for? What sort of people are you really looking to? To come into this, who would really benefit from this? Because everybody's going to be ready.
No, and I mean, and I don't want to sound arrogant or braggadocious, but anybody can benefit from this. I mean, I have CEOs of, multi-billion dollar companies that I talk with, and, they're like, geez, I didn't know that, right? And so they can benefit from that because they can direct it downward into the sales teams. Because a lot of companies are, especially now over the last couple of years with the pandemic, they're a little flat-footed right now on how do you sell virtually. And, they're grappling with that. So this, obviously this works virtually because that's really where the whole methodology kind of began was online, right? I mean, we were doing online selling before there was video conferencing. So we were doing it over the phone. And, but my real target market has been morphing more toward those expert markets, right? The coaches, the consultants, the trainers, the agencies, and salespeople, right? And I teach from a business-to-business approach. So the reason I teach from a business-to-business approach is it works with business-to-consumer as well. And so, but if you try to teach business to consumer and try to put that into a business to business approach, it doesn't work well at all. So that's really the target market that I've been helping. And, Karen, you were part of that market, right? So, I mean, you understand what.
Well, there's a gap. People need it and they don't seem to be having it. All the focus seems to be on all the other stuff, all the fluffy stuff, as it were, but it's not actually bringing in the money. It's all about how, like you said earlier, about how people perceive them. So it's all about the professionally done photos and having all bells and whistles website. But actually, the most important thing is surely getting money, getting clients in. Getting money in the bank, getting testimonials in so that you can go out and sell more. And they, I don't know, they just, there seems to be a missing link. People are still avoiding it.
Well, it's fear when it comes down to it, right? Because there's a few things that I could unpack there. I'm going to come back to marketing, in a moment, but it's fear. And why do I know this? Not because I'm so smart. It's just because I've worked with tens of thousands of people. And I can tell you across the board, this is what happens. It's fear. And that fear comes from our upbringing in most cases. So we learn behaviors from mom, dad, preacher, teacher, whoever, right? Friends. And we were rewarded for that, or we were handed the stick, the old carrot or the stick. If we were horses. So, and the reality is we were also rewarded and we said, oh, that's great because we're being rewarded, but we were being taught the wrong thing. So let me give you an example. I witnessed this one time. Well, I witnessed it hundreds of times, but this one time stood out. I was hired by a company to watch their salespeople and figure out what was wrong with the sales process for them. So I'm shadowing these people, and we're sitting in an office, and this person, I won't name them, but this person had been speaking with this person and they closed the sale. The owner of the company literally said, "Yep, I'll take it. I'll take it at this price." Now, the salesperson then went back and started renegotiating. I know your eyes are going, "What? Yeah. Why would they do that? That makes no sense. They had the sale." They started renegotiating. And when they started renegotiating, it started creating doubt in this business owner's mind. And the sale unraveled right there. I mean, the buyer was like, got the checkbook open. Give me the agreement. I'm going to sign it. Here's the deposit. It was a pretty high-end sale too. And when we walked out, I said, "What was that?" They said, and they literally said, "What was what?"
Oh, right? So they didn't recognize it themselves.
Correct. So what happened is they grew up in an environment where their family negotiated for everything. And if they got the deal, they still negotiated down to a better deal. And they were rewarded as children for doing that growing up.
Ah.
And so these things become, I think the word is called scotomic, where you look at something and you see something else, or you can't see something, right? I think that's the psychological word for it. But the reality is that happened. Another time I was witnessing a real estate agent, and the sale on this house was a whopping $4 million. It was $4.2 million. And
wow.
Now, if you think about it,
nice commission.
Yeah, it's 6%, which is usually what they get. Now, they might have negotiated it down, right? It's not a bad payday. Not the real estate agent doesn't get all of that. They got to spill it with the brokerage and the listing agent. But let's say they're getting 2%.
Splitting hairs, Doug. You're splitting hairs. Here's a nice commission.
I'm watching this go on. The wife is going, "I love this house. It's amazing. Absolutely love this house." The husband's going, "I don't really know if it's for me," but, and the wife literally is walking him over going, "Sweetheart, look at the pool out here. Can you imagine our children sitting out by the pool out here? We're having, you know, barbecue and we're having a great time and you work so hard and, you know, you come home and relaxed and I've got everything ready and we're just out as a family having, and the kids are swimming in the pool." And he's like, "Yeah, I could see that. That would be great." And then she's walking him around the house and "See this room here. See the kitchen. I mean, this kitchen has X, Y, Z." And she's going through every single room with him. And he's still going, "I'm really not sure. This is just a fair amount of more money than I wanted to probably put it, you know, buy the home for." Right. And they're going back and forth, back and forth. And the wife's winning. And here's what the real estate agent says. The gentleman goes, "I just don't know. It seems like it's a very important decision we're making, sweetheart." And the real estate agent goes like this, "You know, that's a really good point. I think you two ought to take a day or two to think this thing through. And I want you to just go home, talk about it, and get back to me and let me know." And if I could have kicked this real estate agent in the leg, I would have. Right? Because here's what happened, Karen. 2 days later, they call her back. Now, I wouldn't have kicked her because it's a woman, but I would have kicked her back. 2 days later, they call her back. She goes, "Hey, if you made a decision," they go, "Yes, we have. So what did you decide?" "We decided to buy a home in that neighborhood." "Great. Let me come out and show you some other homes." "Oh, no, I'm sorry. We decided to buy a home in that same neighborhood." "Well, what are you talking about?" "Well, you know the other house down the street?" And they gave the address. "And yeah. We bought that one." $5 million.
Oh, so what went wrong? Because what I was hearing from you was he was doing quite well with the woman, painting a nice picture and getting them to see. So what was the disconnect with the husband? What was the failure then? It was
the real estate agent that created the disconnect.
Yeah. So, yeah. Was that because he wasn't dealing with the husband side of it and focusing on the wife, or?
So if she had a focused on the wife and the husband together, right? He wanted to buy something. He wanted to make the wife happy. He wanted the family. He wanted all of this. But there was something within that house that he was just kind of like teetering on, right? She never addressed that whatsoever. She never looked at that aspect of it at all. She had her own buyer's bias, which is she has such high empathy. She has a high need to please.
Ah.
So when they were getting into kind of not an argument, but just kind of going back and forth, she perceived this as, okay, this is stress. Let me take care of that issue versus taking care of the buyer, what they're looking for. And that's why, hey, let's back out, take a couple of days to think about this, because that's what she would have done.
Yes. So we put our own, and that's what I know that's what I've done in the past. So right. What I'm hearing from you is we're putting our own biases out on them rather than asking more questions and getting to the crux of the problem.
And having that conversation to help them cross that bridge of fear, which was going on between him and her for whatever reason. And obviously that bridge of fear wasn't about money, because they spent $800,000 more.
Yeah. Wow. And I mean, that's just, I can see that in a lot of people, and especially who sort of we deal with, especially the therapists or healers, because they naturally want to please, and so again they're sort of avoiding that. But actually, and I know this is one thing that you taught me, is if you really think that that is the right thing for them, it is actually your moral obligation to ask the uncomfortable questions. Mm-hmm. Because maybe it is this fear. And I still struggle, I've got to say, because sometimes to ask a deeper question can feel a bit uncomfortable, but actually you're serving. And I think this is the mindset shift that so many need to make, is the fact that it's not about you. It's not about how you feel. It's about them. And actually you're serving them more if you do go deep. Like we just said earlier, you know, you think I didn't like you when you were asking me the difficult questions. Because, yeah, it's uncomfortable. But was that the right thing for you to do? Absolutely. So this seems to be what the mindset shift that so many need to make, is that, right. Yeah,
and running and away from it. That can be made safely. That's the thing. Like, so it's not about psychotherapy or going in and doing things that make you completely uncomfortable or vulnerable to a place where we feel unsafe, right?
No.
No one likes that, right? Well, maybe a few people like that, but I've never met anybody who likes that. I certainly don't like it either. It's about us being able to challenge in a logical way those things that we already know are holding us up. And, you know, I love in the group of what we were in, and, you know, what Kevin said to me, what he said to other people, you're not going to like him, but you'll get results. And because I know that for the benefit of people that go through our trainings anyways, if we don't help them cross that bridge, they can get all the technical skills in the world. I mean, think about their real estate agent, $4.2 million home at 2% commission. What is that, $82,000 on a commission? Yes. Right? So she had all the technical skills to get them there. But what she lacked was that one true authentic self piece in aligning it with what you and I were just talking about, being her true authentic self. Now, if she had said something like, guys, I know this is a really important decision for you. It's your family. And I have high empathy on this issue that you guys are going back and forth and there might be some unanswered questions. And I'd like to be able to clarify that. So, you know, Joe, you feel comfortable and Mary, you feel comfortable. Mary, it seems like you really want this house. Joe, it seems to me like you're kind of like not wanting the house, but you're not 100% sure. And then just start asking questions. You know, Joe, what about this house doesn't appeal to you, right? What about this house does appeal to you? Joe, from a financial capacity, you know, because I didn't tell the whole story, Karen, but the wife was even, she was an ex-attorney and she stopped to raise the children. And she even said to Joe, I'm going to go back to work and I'm going to make this easier on us. I'll pay the mortgage.
Wow.
Right. And so the point here, but see, instead of that empathy serving that real estate agent at that point in closing the deal, that empathy went back inside her as, okay, I've had these childhood fears and traumas or whatever has happened to me. I wouldn't want to be pushed, so I'm not going to push. And she didn't have to push. She just had to clarify and help them cross that bridge of fear. So with healers and therapists, you know, the nature is I want to help people. And that's wonderful. But if we leave them hanging and we know they shouldn't have been left hanging, are we truly helping them? Or are we better off? I agree with you. Are we better off going the extra few rounds with them verbally, if you will, to help them understand that there is a new path, a new way out, and they can take it. Now, whether they do or not, that's another issue. But as long as we leave them in a better place than when they started with us, we're playing win-win.
Right.
And sometimes, I mean, I just sold a $10,000 3-month package for somebody. And I literally said to the gentleman something that made his ears kind of stand up and listen. And he said to me, you know, cause you had all these reasons why, well, I can't do this. I've got my kids got, you know, baseball coming up and this is happening and that's happening and this happening. I said to him, I said, how long have you been trying to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish? And he said about 2 years now. I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, how long have you been lying to yourself? And he said to me, what? I said, either this is a priority for you or not, because I'd like to know. And we started talking about that. And as we got talking about that, he said, why do you say that? I said, well, let me look at it this way. If one of your children was upstairs and you had a broken leg and you couldn't get off the sofa, but the fire alarm went off and smoke started filling the house and your child was trapped in that bedroom, I said, I have a feeling you'd get off that sofa and crawl your way up there and jump out the window with your child if need be, cradling them to the ground. So you hit first. And he said, oh, absolutely. I said, why aren't you giving yourself or your business permission to be the same? And he said, oh my gosh, that's not the word he said, but you know, he said, I never thought of it that way. He's like, I'm not giving myself the opportunity. Right. And, you know, so he went from, I can't do this because I have no money, to paying in full.
Right.
Right.
And so that is because nobody's asked them those sort of questions. So they haven't had the opportunity to even look at it from that, because like I said, they're lying to themselves. Again, not conscious, unconsciously, until somebody makes them aware that, oh yeah, that is what I've been doing. So I suppose it's just to not be afraid to actually ask another question.
What it is, Karen, is I'm not afraid if he doesn't buy.
Ah.
Right? And so I use the word possibly. I said, how long have you been possibly lying to yourself, to soften it a little bit?
Yeah.
But it's, I'm not afraid if somebody says no. which goes back to what I wanted to bring back on marketing. The challenge with a lot of people is they're being taught marketing. They're not being taught sales conversion. So they're mistaking marketing for sales conversion. Marketing can be the direct response of getting a response from somebody, or it can be branding. And in many cases, they're trying to do the branding and they're trying to do direct response without speaking to someone. See, that's like playing tennis by ourselves. We lob the ball over, you know, we get somebody to the court, the marketing, we lob the ball over the net, we get a response, they hit it back to us, and we put our racket down and we don't ever play again, right?
Yeah.
So that person's standing on the other end going, hey, I just knocked the ball over to you. Or we don't even get the person to the thing. We're just banging the ball against the wall and just thinking that's going to work over and over and over and make us, you know, a Wimbledon champion.
Yeah. And, you know, that happens. That happened. I've even had, you know, people have sort of sent, and it's obviously an automated thing, even if it's in a message on LinkedIn or something. And I've replied implying that, I want to know more. And I've heard nothing back. You know, you think, you've just lost a sale. Like I may have bought from you because I was looking for that thing. I don't mind getting this. You know, some people object to, and I think that's what it is. Some people avoid putting it out there because they're afraid, because they don't want to be pushy. Well, if you're not looking for that thing and you've been getting that kind of message the whole time, it might irritate some people. It doesn't bother me because you just scroll on by. I don't see the problem. But in this case, it was something that I was actively looking for. So I thought, well, you've come to me. Great. Let's have a chat. And then crickets. And you think that's your process is very, very wrong. You're doing this work and not doing the final piece.
That's like asking somebody out on a date. They say yes, and then you never talk to them again.
I mean, it's madness. So again, it's almost, it must be this fear of actually doing that final piece. So for the listeners out there, because we're starting to run out of time, I could talk to you forever, Doug. We can have long conversations, can't we? But if they can't see your deets down here and they're just listening in, if they want to know more, how do they get in touch with you?
So they can, I want to plug a book right now, Karen, the book I wrote, right? So
I should have it here.
Because we're talking about where these things come from. So win-win selling, unlocking the power of profitability by resolving objections. I wrote a book on that. A lot of what we're talking about now on why these things form and how these things form and what you could do about it is in that book. So I'm plugging my book. But they can get a hold of me at, they can go to the website and check me out at www.ceosalesstrategies.com. My LinkedIn is DougBrown123. You know, if they want to know how they're doing on their marketing or sales, you know, ask us for our marketing sales, marketing and sales checklist, if you will. It's an assessment they can take and they can find out, oh, okay, I'm not that strong in this area. I'm strong in these areas. And, you know, if they want to send me an email, Doug@CEOSalesStrategies.com. I may not answer it directly. We will answer it and then I'll follow up with you because I have two people, you know, keeping my schedules. But yeah, those would be the best ways to get it. And then, you know, I do have a podcast called the CEO Sales Strategies Podcast if they want to hear more about me. But all you have to do is type in Doug C. Brown, you know, revenue growth expert, and I'll come up all over the
You'll
place.
Be there. Yeah. I've even got you in my ebook because a lot of the stuff that I'm teaching now, you know, where did I get the idea from? Where did I get it from? I got it from Doug. Doug's helped me on my journey. And well, it's still a journey.
But here it always is, right? I mean, you and I just had this conversation. Like it always is. I have a very, one of my mentors, he is 77 years old this year, and he's still actively doing, name is Alan Weiss. He's known as the Millionaire's Consultant, right? And he's constantly helping me, and still I'm learning, and he's learning every day. He learns things from me. I learn things from you, Karen. You learn things from me. That's another attribute about a 1% earner. You know, they are doing self-education in some capacity on a continuous basis, because they're always trying to get just that little bit better. You know, I mean, if we go, you know, down the football field and we get to the striker zone, and then we get just a little closer to the goal and a little closer to the goal and a little closer to the goal. That's what we're looking for. But, you know, it's not as hard to get to the striker zone. It's much harder to get from that zone to the goal line. Mm. And that we got to continuously keep educating ourselves.
Oh, yeah. It's an ongoing journey. And the fact that you've got to practice. If you're not having the calls, how can you improve on them? If you're not having these conversations, how are you ever going to, if you're going to avoid it? You can't automate it all. I mean, we do live in a world where, you know, we are, I mean, it's an absolute blessing with the kind of software and tools and things that we do have up our fingertips, but they're only doing a part of the process.
Well, and come to the 1% Academy here. You know, I mean, you know as well as I do, Karen, because you've been through it. I mean, we do lots of live interactive exercises together. And
and I think that's what so much is missing, because, again, everybody wants to just, you know, put you through a generic pre-recorded training, because that's it. They built it once and they can just put it online. But that's what seems to be missing, is having that interaction. And from my personal point of view, you know, if I didn't have that ability to be able to practice the skill sets, you can only get so far from reading a book, watching a video, getting on a course. But without actual real life, you know, even role play, or even just sort of discussing ideas and verbalizing it and being taught in that way. And I really feel that that's what seems to be missing a lot. And I know firsthand that's what you excel at.
That's because technology was supposed to make people's lives easier, and it does. But I think what's happened is people are hiding behind the technology. And when you're going to go to a high-end sale, because, you know, people talk about all the time, high ticket sales, right? I mean, when you're going to go to a higher level sale, it has to involve, almost every time, conversations. I have, as you know, Karen, I have sold, you know, consulting arrangements, you know, where we got $435,000 for a consulting arrangement over the phones, right? We closed it over the phones. We never met in person, but we had, you know, about 6 conversations. Now, was that worth my time? Absolutely. So, right? So we, you know, and this is what we teach, obviously. We teach people how to do this, and you're a product of the product. I mean, I even remember, you know, years back when you started, compared to what I can see now and where your life is gone, it's like a way different world, you know. And,
completely.
And I'm not saying I did this, that my training only did this. You did your part. But what I am saying is that when people understand the pathway, that success path of how to do this, they realize it's not that scary and it's not that big of a deal. And they then start separating themselves from everyone else who's trying to be not that. And that's where people will respond to them. Because it, as you said, it's so missing. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, Karen. I mean, you know, it's kind of like trying to develop any relationship. It's really hard to develop a long-term relationship over email.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely. You need to. I mean, you know, and I get it. That's why video is obviously a bit better, because you can get a feel of a person. But yeah, nothing's going to ever replace. So yeah, I think it's coming. It's got to come back full circle. Yeah, we use these things to try and make our lives easier. And then we realize that, no, come on, people need that interaction, that personal interaction.
Well, I know we got to go, but AI is not making it any easier for people, right?
No. Here we go.
It's not making it any easier. I had a a vision appointment. I want to name the company because they're so terrible, but I had a vision appointment and they didn't check the insurance. In the United States, you have insurance for all this stuff. So they didn't check the insurance. They called me 10 minutes before my appointment and say, hey, I don't know if you have insurance for this or not. And I'm like, we talked to you 2 days ago, right? That type of thing. So they literally got frustrated, hung up. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go to the corporate office and just let them know my experience. And so they're like, click on this chat, you know, to get a live person. And I click on the chat and it's a bot.
Yes.
And so it says something to me and I'm like, this doesn't seem like a live person. So I type in a phrase that I know the bot won't understand. And then then the bot goes, well, please reschedule your appointment. Right. And then I'm like, okay, so now I'll go to the whole opposite thing and type something the bot won't know again. And I did. And then it came back with, please reschedule your appointment. Right. it's like, are you a bot? I don't understand. Right. And it's like, so that just depletes the human connection. And there's no way I'll do business with this company.
It's trust gone. So as much as everybody's trying to build the know, like, and trust, man, it can be gone instantly.
Oh, yeah, there you go. It's like, you know, finding somebody with your significant other, you know, and you're like, what happened here? We were together. Yeah. What's up, right? You know,
done.
And so when we do that, it's easy to break that rapport, but it would have been so easy for this company to fix that challenge if they just had said, hey, I'm a live person. Listen, let's talk for 2 minutes. I want to understand what's going on. And then it would have been like, this is what happened. They go, oh, geez, that's not right. Let me help you. And boom, we would have had the relationship and they would have had the sale.
Well, they lost out. Thank you, Doug, so much for being on here. Thank you for your time today. It's been lovely speaking to you, as always.
Thanks,
and I hope everybody got a lot out of that and that this is the most important part of your process. So get in touch if you want to be in the top 1% earners. Who doesn't, right? And the rest of you, I will be back on Thursday with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.